Ask the Doctor is brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare.
And what's up, everybody? You are listening to Ask the Doctor here on News 104.5 WOKV. It is brought to you by St. Vincent's. As always, I am Tim Tompkins, and I am joined today by Dr. Mark Hayes. He is a cardiologist with St. Vincent's Healthcare. And not to get too punny on you, but we're here to talk about heart-related issues having nothing to do with Valentine's Day. We're here to talk about the medical side of the heart. As always, phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Hayes, the number to call is 904-340-1045. Again, that is 340-1045. Dr. Hayes, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's always my pleasure, Tim.
Did you get a chance to enjoy this beautiful weather outside by chance?
It's beautiful outside. I got to walk around a little bit. I took my family to lunch. We walked around town center. It was absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, is it packed by chance?
It is packed, yes.
I thought so. I have to go do some Valentine shopping myself after the show, and I was thinking, oh man, I don't know about going over to the town center. But so we are here to talk about issues of the heart, and it's something that affects so many people, and it can affect them on us. Small level issues that they can really deal with to heart attacks and things that can, I know, unfortunately cause death. And you were telling me a little bit before we went on air that there are four separate categories of heart problems.
Yeah, typically I divide it up into those four categories. People think of heart attacks as being the most common thing we see, and it probably is, but there are other things we will see. Heart attacks are problems with the arteries of the heart, which is how blood flow gets to the actual heart muscle itself. You can also have diseased heart muscle, so that's the second category. So arteries is number one, heart muscle will be number two. You can have problems with the valves in the heart. There are four separate valves in the heart, which helps blood go the right direction, or you can have trouble with the electrical system. So those are the four categories I discuss when I'm talking to my patients about what's going on with their heart.
Somebody that might be having heart issues, how do they know whether or not they're having the muscle, the artery, the valve, the electrical?
Well, the artery problems is, like I said, the most common thing we would see. So a heart attack typically occurs with some sort of discomfort in the chest. And I don't say chest pain because sometimes people don't actually have pain. They actually have discomfort like pressure or heaviness or tightness in the chest. They may have shortness of breath. They may be sweaty. They may feel nauseated. So all of those can be signs of heart attacks. Heart attacks can present in several different ways. So anything that makes someone very uncomfortable, especially shortness of breath, which is probably the most common thing we would see, someone needs to seek help if they have those symptoms.
Speaking of heart attacks, and we're going to get into that a bit more in length coming up on the show, but the symptoms aren't the same for men and women.
That's correct. Women can have more fatigue and more shortness of breath and not have the discomfort, the pressure sensation, the tightness in the chest that we always think about. Anybody who's had open heart surgery, also those nerves are cut to the heart. So they may not have discomfort or tightness or any sort of sensation in the chest itself. They may just have fatigue or shortness of breath. Typically, people notice a change in their symptoms. They feel fine at one moment. The next moment, they don't. So it's usually a fairly abrupt change.
So if you're a woman or a man, for that matter, but you're trying to notice a really abrupt change right there, and that's a good sign, because it seems like, especially for women, that it's really hard to tell.
Yeah, it can be. And so we tell people to make sure you listen to your body, because people know their bodies. And so if someone comes in and says, this is a change, always listen to that, because they're going to know what their sensations are like.
And so you're listening to Ask the Doctor here on News 104.5 WOKV. Phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. I have Dr. Mark Hayes here in the studio with me. He is a cardiologist with St. Vincent's. As always, the show is about you, so let's go ahead and go straight to the phone lines. We have Mary over in Arlington. Mary, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you, sir?
Doing well.
Okay. I have some questions that I think may be of interest to other listeners also.
Sure.
I would like to know, how is your heart kept beating when you are having some kind of an implant put in?
If you're referring to like a valve implant, actually the heart is not beating. For open heart surgery, they actually will divert the blood through a heart-lung machine. So it's a machine that's on a table next to the operating table, and blood goes through that machine, and it is actually oxygenated through that machine. So the heart is actually stopped if a surgeon has to work on that heart. So if they're putting in a new valve, they almost always have to stop the heart. For bypass, sometimes they will keep the heart beating during that aspect of surgery, and it's a different type of surgery, and it's a little bit safer surgery in some situations just to keep the heart beating. But if they actually have to open the heart to put in an artificial heart valve, then they will stop the heart for that.
Okay, and how about for if you just have stents, what's the process for that?
If we're
heart still the heart still beating?
It is still beating during a stent. When we put a stent in somebody, often we can go through the groin, through an artery in the groin, or even through the wrist, an artery in the wrist, and snake a catheter up to the heart itself. And we want the heart beating so we can watch where I'm putting in the stent. So people are awake during a stent implantation. Sometimes they will fall asleep. Often we give them a little sedation just to make them comfortable, but they can be awake, and often people will say, I want to watch, and they will watch on the screen as we implant a stent inside the heart. So the heart stays beating during a stent.
Is it, are there ever any rejections to any of these implants, or does the body ever reject any of these implants?
No, the stents are made from very small amounts of metal, and so I've never seen anybody reject them. Even people that have some metal allergies tend to do fine. I have seen very rare situations where a stent may get infected. I've only had one patient in my 20-some-odd year career that ever had an infected stent and had to be removed. But they don't seem to be rejected. Since it is metal being implanted in an artery and that metal is exposed to blood, the blood will try to clot. And so if someone has a stent, they do take at least two blood thinners for usually a year or so after the stent is implanted so those stents do not clot off. They do not seem to be rejected. There is inflammation around the stent, and whether that's a form of rejection, no one has really ironed that out. Probably not, but they do not seem to be rejected. They're very small amounts of metal in those stents.
Okay. What's the difference between a platelet inhibitor and a blood thinner?
Oh, well, a platelet inhibitor is a form of blood thinner. There are several different types of blood thinners and two different ways that the blood can clot. It can clot through platelets and clot through proteins. So most blood thinners either respond to affecting the platelets or they affect the proteins in the blood. So platelet inhibitors are a form of blood thinner.
Do you have any suggestions for somebody with cholesterol who cannot take the statins?
Well, at this point, the only thing we know that helps prevent heart disease are the statins. And they do lower cholesterol as well. They work in other pathways other than just cholesterol. But there are other medications out there that lower cholesterol that may or may not have any effect on the heart. There are different types of dietary medications you can take. And there's a new medication on the market. I think there are now three of them where you actually inject yourself every 2 weeks to lower your cholesterol. Those drugs have not been shown to help the heart yet. Those studies are still being done. But there are other medications that can lower cholesterol other than statins. We just know statins are the only medication that seem to help prevent blocked arteries from occurring.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for the phone call, Mary. We appreciate you calling. And I also want to take a moment right now. I want to talk to you quickly and let you know about the St. Vincent's Medical Mission at Home. Volunteers will be providing free basic medical care, health and vision screenings, along with wellness, financial info, social services, even foot washing to people right here in the Jacksonville community who might not otherwise be able to get this type of care. And it's coming up early next month on March 5th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's at FSCJ's Advanced Technology Center in downtown Jacksonville. So if you know anyone who might be underinsured or underinsured, and they're in need of this type of care, please let them know about the upcoming St. Vincent's Medical Mission at Home. And for more information on this, you can visit medicalmissionathome.org. Let's go ahead and go to Russell over in Arlington. Russell, you are on Ask the Doctor.
Yes, sir. I had a viral cardiomyopathy issue on July of 2014, and had an efficiency fraction, ejection fraction of 15%. And I'm wondering if the heart will heal itself over time or if I have to look at a 15% output. I'm just this has happened, and I had a pacemaker put in, or CART-D, Boston Scientific, and one of the leads pulled out of the heart, and they haven't replaced the other lead yet, so I'm back to 15%, and I'm wondering what kind of symptoms or what kind of problems could occur from having this virus attack my heart. It's not like I have any blockage or any issues, no issues whatsoever, and the virus just killed part of my heart, basically.
Yeah, this is where I went back to when I talked about different types of heart disease, and you can have a disease of the heart muscle itself, and that's exactly what you're describing. So we don't know exactly why viruses can get into the heart muscle and cause the heart muscle to weaken. We think probably the virus is picked up by the muscle, then the body attacks the virus, and it causes the heart function to diminish. So you're describing the ejection fraction, which is the percentage of blood that's ejected from the heart when the heart contracts. Normal is around 50 to 70% in that range, and so you said yours is down about 15%, and that's what we will see if somebody has a virus attack the heart. The heart will dilate, it'll get larger, and then the heart function can weaken. 20 years ago, we had it was not very, very positive how people would recover from that. And now we do have medications that have changed the game quite a bit. So people can get a lot better with the medications with the cardiomyopathy. The type of devices we implant often will put wires in certain parts of the heart that will make the heart contract better. So I've had folks went from 15% up to back to normal. Sometimes it takes several years of medication, and it's pretty aggressive medication to get someone normal. But I've had people completely recover back to normal with a viral cardiomyopathy. So there is definitely hope. Take your medications. Exercise is important, but that can recover that.
Yes, yes. Well, I've been able to increase on the exercise, and my doctors or St. Vincent's, and they are the best that I can find. And I've been 100% satisfied with him. I've just got to have this last surgery to replace that last lead, and hopefully we'll be back on top again. So, but thank you for your information. I was just dying of curiosity, you might say.
Absolutely. And then certainly those leads are very difficult to get in the right place. So sometimes that's a challenge to do. And we used to, years ago, we just put a lead in one spot, didn't worry about it. Now we try to put them in certain spots of the heart, and it really will help the heart contract better and people can recover nicer.
Great, great. Well, thank you. Y'all have a great day.
You do,
hey,
the same.
You do the same, Russell. Thank you. So you listen to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. We are talking about issues of the heart, and it sounds like, as far as I can tell, cholesterol plays a huge role on the health of the heart. Why is that?
Well, cholesterol tends to build up in the arteries, and not just in the heart, but can build up in the arteries anywhere in the body, the arteries to the brain, arteries to the kidneys, arteries to the legs. So cholesterol buildup inside the arteries causes those arteries to block down and can cause problems down the road. And it's not just the level of cholesterol in your body. So some people tell me, well, I don't need to take a statin, or I don't need the cholesterol medication. My numbers are normal. Even if your numbers are normal, it's being deposited in the wrong part of the body. So you need cholesterol. It helps form testosterone. It helps form the hormones. So you need some cholesterol in your system. But it's when it's being deposited in the arteries, that's when we need to do something to change that. And these medications can help with that.
And as far as a statin, what is it?
A statin is a medication that works in the liver to reduce the level of bad cholesterol. We talk about three different types of cholesterol. Some people divide it into further categories. But when I talk to my patients, I talk about the LDL, which is the low-density lipoprotein. That's the bad cholesterol. We want those numbers as low as possible. There's also HDL, which is the good cholesterol. We want that high. So women tend to have higher HDLs. People who exercise tend to raise their HDLs. And so the medications that we use to treat cholesterol issues typically lower the LDL, and some will raise the HDL to some extent. The third one we talk about are triglycerides, and those are the more immediate levels of cholesterol in the body. So you eat a big fatty meal, your triglycerides are going to go through the ceiling. You have a lot of sugar or starches, that raises the triglycerides as well. So when your physician's talking about your cholesterol, they're probably talking mostly about the LDL, the bad cholesterol. That's the one we focus on the most.
And how can someone tell whether or not they have a whole lot of LDL as opposed to HDL or vice versa?
It's a fairly simple blood test, and most places will do that. And your physician will want to get a fasting blood test from you, and then they will get the subdivision from the lab as to what your cholesterol is, and they can talk to you about each one of those divisions. Some people will subdivide the HDL and the LDL further, and we do know there are some types of HDL that are better than others. We don't know what to do with that information. So there are medications that can alter that, but we don't know if those medications at this point prevent heart problems down the road.
Okay, and you are listening to an absolutely very special edition of Ask the Doctor. It's a Valentine's Day weekend edition, so we are talking about issues of the heart. I have Dr. Mark Hayes here in the studio with me. He's a cardiologist with St. Vincent's. And we're going to be going to break here in a second, but before we do it, I know it's a silly question. I don't care. Cheerios, does that actually do anything for you?
Well, Cheerios is a grain. So anytime you eat a grain or have some sort of fiber, it will lower your cholesterol because it keeps your body from absorbing other cholesterol. Mm. So anytime that you have high fibers, high grains, those things are helpful. The thing you have to do is you just have like oatmeal with eggs. You have oatmeal instead of eggs. That's going to lower your cholesterol. So people think they add their Cheerios, it doesn't take it away.
That's okay. I got you. I see all the commercials. I've always wondered that. So we're going to be talking about peripheral artery disease. We're going to be talking about coronary artery disease. We're going to be talking about heart attacks coming up. We have a couple of callers on the line. The phone lines are open, 904-340-1045. We're going to break right now, but we will be right back on Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's. What's up, everybody? You are listening to Ask the Doctor here on News 104.5 WOKV. I have Dr. Mark Hayes here in the studio with me. He is a cardiologist with St. Vincent's. Phone lines are open. The number to call is 904-340-1045. Let's go ahead and go straight to the phone lines. Dana over in Callahan, how are you doing today?
Good.
So you had a question for the doctor?
Yes. My husband has a pain in his chest that around his heart area that his doctor just seems to think that it's a muscle pulled. He's had a stress test a year ago that showed no problems. Is that normal to have a pulled muscle in that area?
It's not too uncommon, and the good news is most chest pains are not cardiac, but the things we always worry about is when the chest pain is coming from the heart. So typically most physicians will want to rule out the bad stuff first, and if it's not that bad, then we don't get too concerned about it. But it's not too unlikely to pull a chest muscle. The muscles in the chest, the pectoralis muscles, are actually fairly big, and so they're easy to tear or to pull because you use them quite a bit during the day. So as long as his physician is pretty comfortable that it's not coming from his heart, then that's good news. There are other things they may need to look at if it's persistent. But typically, if someone's having chest pains coming from the chest muscle, which we certainly see, it'll be tender. And I'll push on someone's muscle, and they'll say, that's the pain. I know then I've found the cause of the pain in the muscle, not in the heart.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you. Paul and DC, I see you both on the line right there. I'm not sure that I have enough time to take a call right now, so we're going to go to break here in a minute. And when we come back, we'll have like 15 minutes to really delve into your question. So we did get another caller who left a question with our producer, Carlton, and he asks, is taking Viagra bad for your heart and Viagra versus Cialis, which is better?
We get that question asked quite a bit, actually. Viagra, initially, when that drug was being investigated, I think it was by Pfizer many years ago, they thought it was going to be a medication to help the heart. And so all of these patients were on this trial and tried this medication, and it didn't really help the heart, but they kept coming back and saying, I want that medication back again. So Pfizer went on and right, looked into it a little bit further, found out there was another use for Viagra. Mm-hmm. The concern we have with Viagra for the heart is really two things. One, it can interfere with certain medications that we will give people for their heart. Those are mostly nitrates. So someone who's having to take a lot of nitroglycerin because they have bad coronary disease, we can't treat them with stents or bypass surgery, we will put them on long-acting nitrates. And so the nitrates in Viagra, the interaction there can drop the blood pressure very low, and that can be life-threatening, can be quite dangerous. The only other thing we get concerned about is people trying to achieve levels of exertion they're not used to achieving. And mm-hmm. so Viagra can cause that. Mm-hmm. So certainly I want to make sure that if someone's going to go down that pathway that they are exercising routinely, I know what their level of exertion is before I prescribe something like that. So Viagra itself is not really bad for your heart.
First Cialis.
The Cialis is a longer-acting medication, so the only difference between the two really is Cialis stays in the system much longer. So if you were to take Cialis and need nitrates 2 days later, it could potentially drop your blood pressure, whereas Viagra doesn't stay in the system quite as long. But they're both very similar. It's just one of them is a longer-acting medication.
So Cialis is something that you're taking all the time, and then it always keeps you ready, rather than Viagra, something you have to take if you think you might need it?
Yeah, there is a form of Cialis people will take every day for that very reason. So that does stay in your system the entire time, whereas Viagra, typically people take it once every however long they need it, and it clears the system in about 8 to 12 hours.
All right, so you're online and an ad pops up for something that says, this medication is cheaper than Viagra, does the same thing, buy this medication online, no prescription necessary. Should people be falling for that?
I would steer clear of that, because typically you're going to get a false product. You're going to get something else that's not the actual medication. I mean, Viagra has to be controlled by the FDA. It has to be only written through a prescription unless you get it from another country.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, you have lots more time coming up. Dana, Paul, and DC, I see you on the line. I promise I'll get back to you as soon as we get back from this hard break. Stay with us. What's up, everybody? You are listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. It's brought to you by St. Vincent's Healthcare. I'm Tim Tompkins, and today I am joined by Dr. Mark Hayes. He's a cardiologist with St. Vincent's, and a special Valentine's Day weekend episode for you. We are talking about issues of the heart. The phone lines are open. The number to call is 904-340-1045. Again, that is 340-1045. Paul, you have been waiting so patiently on the line. We appreciate you. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon. Dr. Marquez, I have a question about a bicuspid heart valve. I've been told I have a hereditary bicuspid heart valve. Should I have any concerns, or is there any precautions I should take, or anything I need to know about that?
You definitely want to have that followed. A bicuspid valve, typically this is the aortic valve, which is the valve between the major main chamber of the heart and the rest of the body. And so typically there are three cusps in that valve, and some people are born with a bicuspid valve, which means there are two cusps, and three things can happen. Nothing can happen. The valve can always function normally with no problems. The valve can narrow down over time, or it can leak. And so when the valve either narrows or leaks, we tend to follow it fairly closely. And at some point, sometimes people need to have that valve replaced. I've had patients that had the valves that lived well into the 90s and never needed the valve replaced. But sometimes it does end up requiring a valve replacement, so you need to make sure there's a cardiologist following that closely for you.
Is there an age that I should look more closely into that?
Typically, when someone gets in their 40s, that's when I start following them fairly closely. Like I said, I've had people in their 90s and never had a problem, but usually in the 40s when we start following it. If it's going to narrow down, it typically is going to narrow down in the 40s or the 50s. If it starts to leak badly, that can happen at any time. I've had some folks have a leaky valve fairly early in life, even in their early 30s, but typically that's something that's going to happen very slowly over time.
Well, thank you very much. I'm 45, so it's time to get that checked out.
I want to have them take a look at that. Just do an ultrasound of the heart. It's a very easy procedure called an echocardiogram. No needles involved. They just put a probe on the chest. They can get good views of the heart, make some measurements across the valve to see if it's narrowed down and see if it's leaking. It's fairly easy and straightforward to do.
Thank you very much, doctor.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the phone call. We really appreciate you, Paul. Let's go ahead and go over to D.C. You've been waiting so patiently. You are on Ask the Doctor.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
I am a patient with the non-invasive. I had the non-invasive surgery by Dr. Lee at St. Vincent's. Shout out to Dr. Lee. Great guy.
Good to hear.
And I go to different physicians, and when they see it, they're amazed because they don't even know it's being done yet. But my issue is I had the non-invasive on aortic valve. I had an artificial aortic valve placed in, and everything was fine. And then I ran into some complications in October. They have me, I'm getting ready to take another TE at St. Vincent's where they kind of sedate you and put a nice little tube down your throat. And they're thinking it's aortic stenosis, but I think that's why they want to do the TE because I have an artificial valve and not a natural valve. That shouldn't be the case. But I am having these little twitches and discomfort. What would you think that is? I'm hoping I don't have a bad valve. I'm hoping that they're tested frequently before they put on the market.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you had what's called a TAVR or a transcutaneous aortic valve replacement. Essentially, we would go into the leg with a valve on a balloon, kind of like we would deploy a stent in an artery. So this is a valve that's crimped onto a balloon, and it's a tissue valve. We put the balloon right where the valve should go and inflate the balloon, and it deploys this new valve in the spot. We do this when the aortic valve is severely narrowed. Now, sometimes when you deploy the valve, it doesn't open up as much as we'd like to, and it can be slightly narrow. That may be what they're talking about. The bigger concern we have with those valves is you can leak around the valve, and that's when people really get into troubles, when there's a lot of leak around the valve. Now, the transesophageal echo, which you're describing, will give us very good views of that valve. We can make some measurements to see how it looks and make sure it's in a good spot. Typically, if those valves are not completely deployed, they're still better than the valve you were born with, because if that valve you were born with was narrowing down that much, it was a life-threatening condition before Dr. Lee is going to go in there and put a new valve in there. So it's probably, even though it may be a little bit narrowed, it should be better than the valve that you had before the surgery.
Oh, yeah, the new valve is fine. Like I said, it's artificial, and I was just wondering, is there any chance you can get stenosis with an artificial valve, or you kind of explained that already?
You can get stenosis in an artificial valve. When you put in the tissue valves, which is what you would have, those valves can narrow down over time. Usually it's 15, 20 years or something along those lines for those valves will narrow down a great deal. But some people will have to have those valves replaced another time. The new valves that we're implanting now through going through the leg or going through through the chest wall, like you are describing to me, those valves are tissue valves, and they can narrow down. Typically, it's going to take several years to do so.
All right. Well, that answers my question. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks so much for the phone call. We appreciate you. Those phone lines are open. I'm joined by Dr. Mark Hayes here in the studio with me. He is a cardiologist with St. Vincent's. The number to call if you have a question for Dr. Hayes is 904-340-1045. And I just want to quickly let you know about the St. Vincent's Medical Mission at Home. Volunteers will be providing free basic medical care, health and vision screenings, along with wellness, financial information, social services, even foot washing to people right here in the Jacksonville community who might not otherwise be able to get this type of care. And it's coming up early next month. It's on March 5th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. It's at FSCJ's Advanced Technology Center in downtown Jacksonville. So if you know of anyone who might be underinsured or uninsured and in need of this type of care, you want to please let them know about the upcoming St. Vincent's Medical Mission at Home. For more information, visit medicalmissionathome.org. And of course, this show is all about you. So let's go right to the phones. We have Ken over in Ken, you're in Ohio?
No, I'm actually driving on 95 going down to Delray Beach from Sylvania, Ohio.
Okay, all right. I was going to ask you how you were listening, but, you know, thanks so much for calling in, man. We appreciate you.
Powerful station. I recently had a stress test. I'm 69 years old, very active. And during the stress test, the nurse just about fainted. And it was, I was diagnosed with having, I think she said a right bundle blockage, or maybe it was a left bundle blockage. So I said, well, is that bad? What's the deal with that? And she said, oh, it's nothing to worry about. Don't worry about it. Well, you know, what is it exactly?
It's always hard when someone says, yeah, you have this condition, but don't worry about it. So Well, there are two different bundles in the heart, and this is going back to the electrical system that I mentioned earlier, the different problems you can have with the heart, and the electrical system would be one of them, and there's a left bundle and a right bundle as well. Now, typically, if someone's on a treadmill, sometimes when the electricity goes down these bundles, it should go down the same time, but sometimes people will have it go down one bundle a little quicker than the other, and so when you're on a treadmill and your heart rate hits a certain level, it gets to 100, 110 or something along those lines, often the left bundle will fall out, and we'll have what's called a left bundle a branch block. So it's not really an arterial blockage, it's a blockage of the electrical system. So it just means that the electricity going down the heart doesn't really go down that left bundle as well. It goes down the right bundle instead. So it's a change in the EKG. And as long as your heart goes back to normal, once your heart rate comes down, then it's true. It's nothing to be concerned about at this time.
Great. Perfect. And like I said, I'm very active, play handball. So I can get my heart up to, 130, 140 and get it back down generally within 10 to 15 minutes without any issue. So good to know. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Bye-bye.
Appreciate the phone call, Ken. Let me ask you a question. Fitbits, right? Don't those measure your heart rate?
They do measure heart rate, but that they can measure at the level of the wrist. Now, there's a difference between the the pulse rate and the heart rate. So the heart rate is how many times the heart is actually beating. Sometimes the pulse is different than the heart rate. A heart can have a beat that is not felt in the pulse. So a lot of these Fitbits are not always measuring the correct heart rate. They may measure the pulse. People that have irregular heart rhythm like atrial fibrillation, sometimes the Fitbits are very inaccurate as far as what the heart rate actually is. So they may have to wear a monitor, or we can listen to the heart, but often wear a monitor so we can actually count the number of heartbeats is a little bit better.
Okay, so people that have heart issues, it's not, you guys aren't going around and recommending people to wear Fitbits or anything?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's nice to be able to keep track of yourself, and I'll tell people a pedometer's nice, but if a pedometer says you do 10,000 steps, maybe you should do 12,000. I try to get people to be encouraged to exercise. So if it's something that's going to help you achieve a goal or set a goal to try to achieve, then I'm always for it. But not necessarily Fitbits are going to be the best thing you can do for yourself or your health.
I got you. Well, the phone lines are open. I have Dr. Hayes here in the studio with me. The number to call is 904-340-1045. We have Joe over in Green Cove. How you doing today, Joe?
Doing fine.
And thanks for calling.
The gentleman mentioned Dr. Lee. In 07, I had my aortic valve replaced with the less invasive surgery with Dr. Mostovich. And I think that Dr. Lee assisted. I think they were together, something like that or whatever. But they asked me, they didn't make the decision. They asked me, which valve do you want? Do you want a bovine tissue valve or do you want a mechanical valve? And I went with the bovine tissue valve, which eventually I guess I'll have to replace, because I didn't want to go on the Coumadin. And I know people that, don't have any problem with Coumadin whatsoever, and I know people that battle it for the rest of their life. But with what you had said, with the newer valves that surely in the 15 years from 07, they told me, Dr. Mostovich told me, they're getting 15 to 20 years, with a bovine tissue valve rather than a pig valve. And he put in a really large one. He said he put in the largest one that he could put in.
That's good.
And I was thinking that they knew what was coming down the pipes with the artificial valves that they the valves that they can put in through your artery with a bigger hole that they can evidently slide that valve into there easier. So I was totally satisfied with everything that you know, with procedures I had. And I don't think that my recovery time was less than other people's, but I definitely think it was better because your chest is not cracked open.
Right, yeah.
But the valves that you're doing now, like bovine tissue or whatever the newer valves are they lasting longer than the ones that they were putting in 07?
We don't exactly know just yet. They probably will, but the valve that we're using now is the tissue is very similar to the one you had in 07. And you're right, 20 years ago we would tell people these valves have to be replaced in 10 years. And now we don't say that anymore. I have valves that have lasted 15 to 20 years. But we do know if you had an aortic valve replaced that we do have the TAVR technique where we can go in and implant a new valve even within an old artificial valve. That can be done and it has been done. So we've known that this has been coming down the pathway for probably 10 to 15 years. I agree with that. And we know the other things that are being done in Europe that we'll probably have available to us in 10 to 15 years from now that we're not doing in the U.S. just yet. So we always know what's coming down the pike, what we think is coming down the pike. And so that's why even back then, 10 years ago, we were saying maybe you'd consider a tissue valve because you do not have to take the Coumadin for life. And you're correct, Coumadin can be a challenge. Some people do great with it. Some people really battle with it. And so if we can avoid that challenge, it's always better.
When you use the term artificial valve, does artificial valve mean the mechanical valve, or is artificial either or?
Either or. Anything that's not the valve you were born with being artificial valve. And there are two types, okay. Like you mentioned, the mechanical valve and a tissue valve, which would be bovine or porcine.
Bovine or what?
Or porcine. It can become from a pig tissue or a cow tissue. Depends on the maker.
Yeah. Okay. All right, well, that answers my question, and thank you very much.
You bet. You take care.
Thanks so much for the phone call. Really appreciate you. We have Brian on the line. We're coming up on a break right now. We're going to break a little bit early, Brian, so we have plenty of time to answer your phone call. As soon as we come back, stay with us. Plenty of time for Ask the Doctor here on News 104.5 WOKV, joined by Dr. Mark Hayes, and it is brought to you by St. Vincent's, as always. What's up, everybody? You are listening to Ask the Doctor right here on News 104.5 WOKV. It's brought to you by St. Vincent's. I have Dr. Mark Hayes here in the studio with me. He's a cardiologist with St. Vincent's. And we have Brian, who's been waiting so patiently on the line. Brian, we really do appreciate you.
All right. I have a condition. I've heard two terms applied to it. One was hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and I heard the doctor referred to it once as HOCM, hyperobstructive cardiomyopathy. I don't know if it's the same thing or if one is a subset of the other. But my question is this. I'm in my late 60s in good shape. I like to jog, and when I start to jog, sometimes it takes two or three tries. I'll run for maybe 50 or 100 yards. My heart will start to pound hard and irregularly, and then I have to stop and walk for a couple of minutes and try it again. And once I get past that point, I can go for 2, 3, 4, 5 miles without any trouble. But I'm wondering what's going on in the beginning. Why am I having problems with this hesitation?
Well, if you have the hypertrophic obstructive cardiomyopathy, it means when your heart contracts, not all the blood is getting out of the heart like it's supposed to. There's a little piece of muscle that's blocking it from getting through the aortic valve. And so there's something called preconditioning. Whenever you exercise, your blood vessels have got to adapt to that, and sometimes it's going to take a little bit longer for them to adapt to the fact that you have this heart muscle issue in your heart. It's not very common. We certainly see that, and people can either take medication to take care of it. They can surgically go in there and remove the muscle that's causing a problem, and usually that's kind of a big deal, nothing we just jump right into. And in some centers, they can actually inject pure ethanol down an artery and kill off that part of your heart and actually cause a heart attack in that part of your heart. And that's a little bit tricky because sometimes it's larger than they expect. So I'm sure your physician wants to try medications first, let you adapt to it, and try to avoid any surgery. But typically, when you're starting off with your exercise, your body's having to get used to the fact you're not pumping as much blood out of your heart as your body needs at that moment.
Okay. Yeah, and also, too, on the alcohol ablation treatment, are there any what about long-term, what about longevity? Are there any studies on that? They know if it'll actually bring about longevity, or is it just
help reduce symptoms?
It does help reduce symptoms. The issue has been that sometimes when they inject the ethanol down the artery, it attacks a much larger part of the heart than they expect. It can also kill off part of the electrical system, so some of these people end up getting pacemakers. So it's a little tricky. We don't do that procedure here. It's not, I shouldn't say it's experimental, but it's still pretty early on. There are other centers in this area that will do that. We're not doing it at this point, and I have sent people to other centers to have it done. But it is a little bit tricky, and sometimes, and there are there are potential complications for any procedure we do, and this one still has a fair number of complications to it.
Okay. Yeah, the other thing I'm wondering about, too, is when I'm having the initial adjustment period to exercise, would it help to intentionally take deep breaths and thinking that might oxygenate the blood possibly? That might be helpful. On the other hand, too, you're blowing off CO2, so you're causing maybe a little bit too much alkalinity in the blood temporarily. What do you think about taking deep breaths to get past that initial hesitation part?
Well, the deep breaths aren't going to hurt, but I think you might want to just start warming up more slowly. Maybe start off with a very slight jog and build up to that point till your body's adapted to the condition your heart has.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much for the phone call, Brian. We appreciate you. I want to make sure we try and get Carol in right now. Carol, we're coming up on a hard break, but we got about a minute and a half here on Ask the Doctor. What's up?
Okay. I had two stents. I had a mild heart attack last year in December. I'm doing great. I had two stents. And I am on Plavix. I was just wondering, I've been on it for a year and 3 months, something like that. And my doctor said I don't have to take it, you know, forever. I can stop taking it. But I was just wondering about the turmeric that I was interested in taking, the spice turmeric, because it warns against taking it with blood thinners.
Yeah, I'm not aware of a major interaction between turmeric and Plavix, so I'm not aware of any major problem with that. So that's probably okay. And so depending on the type of stent you had put in, typically we will stop the Plavix at about 2 years, 1 to 2 years, depending on what type of stent. So that should not be a major interaction.
Okay. All right. I'll take it slowly. And I would like to eventually, you know, be off the Plavix and try a more natural approach.
Certainly.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for the phone call, Carol. We appreciate you, Dr. Hayes. Thank you so much for coming back on the program. I think at this point we can call you an official friend of the show. Please come back on. We got a ton of phone calls. News, traffic, weather coming up next. We'll see you again right here next Saturday at 2 o'clock for Ask the Doctor, brought to you by St. Vincent's.